The American Family Association's mission is to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. Our goal is to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training or cultural transformation. AFA believes that all men and women, whether in private or public, should be free to exercise their faith without hindrance from the government.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association. Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Hope you're having a great Thursday. Wanted to read to you from Psalm 121, the very familiar psalm. I will lift up my eyes to the mountains. From whence shall my help come? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to slip. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun will not smite you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will protect you from all evil. He will keep your soul. That is so important. The Lord will guard your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forever. Psalm 121. Well, I have in my hand a book that very colorful cover. It's a picture of an ice cream cone with some pink ice cream on top. And it says, One Scoop at a Time, Stories and Lessons from Fear to Faith. And the author is Ricky Dixon, former CEO and president of Bluebell Creameries. Now, Bluebell is headquartered in Brenham, Texas. And way back when I was a salesman for Nalco Chemical Company, Brenham was in my territory, along with College Station and areas like that. And so I called on Bluebell and got to know the guy that was running the boiler system there at the creamery, and got to submit a proposal for that business. It was a big account for us, and I didn't get the business, disappointingly, but I got to know Bluebell, got to tour the plant, and so it's a treat for me to sit next to Ricky Dixon as we talk about this brand new book. So, Ricky, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff. It's great to be here, and I apologize that things didn't work out. If I had just known back then that you were coming, I would have carved the way, but it's great to be here.
Okay, so you started there in 1981, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, you're a graduate of Baylor. You got a degree in what?
I got a degree in marketing and business journalism.
Okay, so I graduated from UT in 1984. And so I know how that routine is. You know, your senior year, then you're interviewing with people. You had never worked for Bluebell before, not in any kind of capacity as a summer job or anything like that, correct?
No, the beauty of the story, though, is while at Baylor, I took a consumer relation class. And in that class, we were given an assignment to follow a company for the full semester. So I went back to the apartment, called my dad, and said, I've got this project. I'm not real sure where to turn. And he said, I am reading an article right now out of a magazine. So I went down, interviewed, or got my information for the paper, and when it came time, the time that you're describing, I thought there was, you know, PR firms and advertising firms, and that was really my direction, or this little ice cream company, and I went in and put an application, and as they say now, after 43 years, yeah, the rest is history.
Okay, so 1981, Brenham is like nothing. I mean, it's small.
It's a hidden treasure.
There you go. That's a good way to put it. The business started when? What year did Bluebell?
1907. We were actually a butter company named the Brenham Creamery.
Okay.
And then it wasn't until later, about 20 years later, that E.F. Kruse, who took over in 1919, changed the name to Bluebell Creameries. Back then, there was a lot of dairies or ice cream companies that were named after flowers. You had Carnation Dairy, mm-hmm, and Lily. And so Bluebell is a flower that grows wild in Washington County in the area. And he thought, we're going to change our name to Bluebell.
I still remember Ricky driving from Houston, where I lived, to go to Brenham and College Station and to make sales calls, that the Bluebonnets would be out.
Yes.
On, what was it, 290?
290.
Uh-huh. and gorgeous.
Absolutely.
And so, but I remember going to call on Bluebell Creameries, and this is late 80s, early 90s. And I mean, there's not a lot in Brenham. I mean, that was the biggest company.
Yes.
By
yes.
Far.
It is main, just a real big mainstay there, and we really do try to make sure that we pour ourselves into the community as well because of that purpose. But it's also, as I mentioned, a treasure, and people from Houston are finding it by the day. The rolling hills and the bluebonnets
yes.
that you've described, and being right between Houston and Austin, almost smack dab in the middle, we have people that are locating from both directions. So,
yeah. Okay, so you go to you go there as a young guy, 1981. What kind of sales was Bluebell doing at that time?
Oh, it's a great question. I would say in the neighborhood of about $75 million at
okay.
the time. We were in Houston, in Austin, and had just gone into the Dallas-Fort Worth market. So when I came on in January 1st of 81, we had been in Dallas for about 2 years. But that's when things were just starting to really, really take off.
Yeah. What was the... So it's been around for a long time. So for Bluebell Creameries, what was the kind of the turning point of becoming this little company that not very many people know about to this huge company?
Well, I would have to then, going into Houston was huge in 1960. There's no question when you leave the little bitty community of Brenham to go into that large of a town, mm-hmm. Can you keep up and meet the demand if it were to take off? And so we took baby steps, as I would say, mm-hmm. and it just slowly started to take off. And the uniqueness of that is if you can't have something, you want it.
Mm-hmm.
And so people in Beaumont, for instance, or when we were in Austin, people in San Antonio, there was a demand that was starting to kind of stir. So going into Dallas was a huge jump, is probably the second big step.
Mm-hmm.
Still strictly in Texas. We didn't leave the state of Texas with one of our branches until 1989. So, but things started, as they say, the ice cream cone started, or the ice cream started rolling down the hill.
Yeah. Okay, so back in the early 80s, the big players in ice cream and grocery stores was...
We always looked at Control Brand as our number one, well, I won't say competitor, but number one in the market. And that's all the different store brands put together into one category. So if you looked at A.C. Nielsen, they were always at the top. You had flavors like Borden's at the time. You had Breyers, and Breyers uh-huh. is still available today.
Right.
But those, and then, of course, Häagen-Dazs, and then soon to come, like the Ben & Jerry's product.
Uh-huh. And Bluebell was priced right in there with those others?
Ben & Jerry and Häagen-Dazs are what we'd call a super premium, made with very high butterfat and very low air or overrun whipped into the product, so you're eating almost a straight mix. Whereas a store brand, and I don't want to get too technical, but a store brand's around 100% air, where you can legally, to be called ice cream, you can't go past 100% air as you whip it into the texture of it
okay.
and be no less than 10% butterfat. We try to find the sweet spot in the middle there. Somewhere.
Okay, so Ricky, I grew up the fifth of six kids and born in 1962. And so my parents were always, going to the grocery store is filling two carts and, with kids like that. But the ice cream was never good. It was, I think I remember Mellorine.
Mellorine was, yes.
That wasn't real ice cream, was it?
No, it was used. I think it came out of, it's been a while since I've talked about Mellorine, but I think World War II, and it was a substitute when you couldn't get the butterfat. It was used a vegetable fat.
I think my dad liked it because it lasted a long time because the kids hated it. He would buy that and cornflakes because we'd be like, hey, where's the good cereal?
Yeah,
this is awful. Okay, so you come in 1981, very first job out of college.
Yes.
What were your aspirations? Were you thinking, well, I'll be here for a little while and then probably move on? How were you thinking as a young guy?
I would say, without a doubt, when I started in Dallas, things were happening at such a rapid pace. I was a territory manager. I had a certain geographic territory that I was overseeing, whether it be the supermarkets that I was calling on or making sure that the delivery or the route salesman was bringing the right flavors in and those kind of things. But I can
and
never...
And all the delivery guys were Bluebell guys. That
yes.
wasn't shopped out.
That's correct.
Okay.
And that's still our model today.
Okay.
And that's the reason we're only in 23 states. We slowly go to the next market,
okay,
and make sure that we handle it consistently.
Yeah.
But I really honestly can never remember a time that, you know, I don't know if this is for me or not.
Yeah.
I loved it. And I had all the way to the time I walked away, and still, yes, there are days that I think, man, I wonder what's happening at the creamery. So I go and get some more ice cream. And,
yeah.
You know.
But you coming in, you didn't know anything about the ice cream business as far as how it was made or anything like that?
You're correct. Absolutely. Okay. No, other than just enjoying eating ice cream, that was all I knew about ice cream.
Yeah. Because I think most people don't realize that's a big process.
It's a very big process. In fact, when I was asked to run our manufacturing plant in Oklahoma, stepping away from sales into the production arena, it blew me away. You know, I am a pretty good salesman when I can tell you give me a half gallon and a spoon, I can sell.
Yeah.
But making sure that we make it against consistently, I wanted to make sure that we were doing it right. And luckily, I learned a tremendous amount during that process.
Well, Ricky, you could probably appreciate this. So when I started at Nalco Chemical Company in 1988, I had to learn about water treatment chemicals and scale and corrosion and microbial problems and how plants operate and things. I mean, that was all a foreign world to me. I knew business. I had a business degree, and I knew how to make friends with people and sell. But going to the engineering side, on the operations side, and the manufacturing side, that's a big steep learning curve, isn't it?
Absolutely. You really want to take it at a pace that you're grasping it, because it leads to the next step. And if you miss any step along the way,
right.
I call it dropping the baton, relating it to a relay race.
Uh-huh.
You want to make sure that when you hand it off to the next level or the next step, that you do it in a way that keeps you going straight.
Well, I was always of the opinion that employees, they don't expect you necessarily to know how to do their job, but they expect you to understand how their job is done. And if you don't understand it, I know this was kind of true for me, I didn't have a lot of respect for a boss that was like, but you couldn't do this and you don't even know what I'm doing. And so how are you grading me on how I'm doing?
Yes, boy, you nailed it on the head. When I took the plant over, I told them, look, you know how to make ice cream. Let me step in the best I can to assist you to be the best you can be in any way that I can. And if it means just handing you a stack of sleeves or the cartons that need to go into the chute, I understood where my limitations were. I have some funny stories in the book that talk about some of the times I did try to jump in. And I learned pretty quick that I needed respect them as much as I was hoping they were doing the same back. And so working together side by side and then trying to again make them the very best that they could be, that was a recipe for success.
Amen. Well, the company, Blue Barrel Creameries, and it's a well-known company in Texas and now Oklahoma and what other states, Ricky?
We are in 23 states. We have ice cream manufacturing plants in Oklahoma and Alabama, and then, of course, our main one here in Texas.
Yeah.
But we go from Arizona to Florida all the way up to Virginia and then back across. So slowly but surely.
Yeah. In 1981, it was just Texas.
In 1981, it was just Texas.
Okay. So you were a sales rep in and sales manager in Dallas for how long?
I started as a territory manager. About a year and a half later, I went to sales manager in Fort Worth.
Okay.
And then in 1984, became our branch manager in San Antonio.
Wow. Okay. You were moving up the ladder quickly.
Yes. Fortunately, we had a small company, and you just worked hard and prayed hard.
Yeah.
Or pray harder.
Yeah. Very good. Well, the book is called One Scoop at a Time, Stories and Lessons from Fear to Faith. And the author is Ricky Dixon, former CEO and president of Blue Bell Creameries. So, Ricky, we want to get into the book, obviously, but let me just ask you an overarching question. What inspired you to write this?
Well, as mentioned before, or as we were talking, I wrote a paper on Bluebell back at the beginning, and I thought, what a better way as I'm stepping away from and handing my scoop in to put into a book stories and lessons. And the fear and the faith really is the heart and soul of how God led me to Baylor, and then from Baylor to Bluebell, and then the journey through Bluebell. So a lot of fun stories about ice cream, how we make flavors and create flavors. But the really true heart of the book is, how do you get through a storm, or how do you find peace in the middle of the storm,
mm-hmm.
when things may be not perfect as we we like to say.
You know, it's funny. So I think people look at a guy that's a CEO of this successful company and, oh, life must be so easy and so wonderful for you. I was listening to a sermon this morning by Jack Hibbs, and he said, hey, just remember this. The bigger the church, the bigger the problems. And, you know, all that glitters is not gold. And just because it looks like something that would be wonderful and big paycheck or whatever, there are a lot of difficulties with that also. And so we need to be grateful for where we are. And absolutely. Lord, prepare us for something, you know, that you want us to do. But don't look at what somebody else has. Look at what God's given you and use that to his glory. Well, you're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here, and we're interviewing Ricky Dixon. One Scoop at a Time is the name of the book, and he was at Bluebell for many, many years and has recently retired. So we'll be right back with more Ricky Dixon. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you. We need to save them. That's why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on you and me. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies. And that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't either. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's 250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at afr.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. We're broadcasting the last day from the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. We're on the floor of the convention hall here in Grapevine, Texas, and having a great time. And I'm sitting next to Ricky Dixon, and he is the author of One Scoop at a Time, Stories and Lessons from Fear to Faith. And Ricky served for 7 years as president and CEO of Bluebell Creameries. Bluebell got its start in Brenham, Texas, and that's still main headquarters, Brenham. That
yes,
hadn't changed.
Still the headquarters.
Okay, so Ricky, how many people live in Brenham? It's grown a lot.
The county itself is probably closer to 30,000, but around in the city, I would say 16,000, 17,000.
Okay, still very small.
Still, we have our second red light now. No, I'm kidding. It's actually larger than that.
Okay, so Bluebell, Brenham is 30 minutes from College Station?
It's closer to about an hour, 50 minutes to an hour, okay. Depending upon where you're going.
Okay. And College Station is next to Bryan. They just call it Bryan College Station, the home of Texas A&M. My wife went to Texas A&M. Ricky, you grew up in what city?
I grew up in San Antonio.
Okay. And went to Baylor for your college?
I did.
And so Baylor was, you graduated in 81.
Actually, December of 80. I snuck out a semester early, which was a blessing because it was just the right time to hit it with Bluebell.
Okay, so Mike Singletary played for Baylor when you were
there.
He did.
Had a couple of classes with Mike, in fact.
Oh, did you? Intense. Mr. Intense.
Mr. Intense. I call him a real good friend. He does not know my name, but no, I'm kidding. wonderful individual, but always intense.
Yes.
Love that guy.
Yeah, not a. I used him in a sermon illustration recently because he wasn't very big. If you just saw him, you wouldn't think this is the monster of the Midway as he played linebacker for the Chicago Bears. But man, he could hit, and he
was incredible.
He was something else. Okay, so we were talking in between on the break. Being a CEO, president and CEO of a company like Bluebell that's blowing and going and you know, multi-million. You said it was $75 million when you started.
That's right.
When you retired, what were the sales?
A little over $75 million.
No, I'm kidding. No. Great job,
no.
Ricky.
No, I would say probably pushing $750 million, about 750.
Mm. Okay, so as I had mentioned, you know, people look at the position of top dog in a company like that. Oh, if I could just have that, then my life would be so wonderful. I'd have, you know, all this money and all these perks and all that stuff. It's not like that, is it?
That's correct.
It's hard.
Yes.
And so sometimes, as the expression goes, all that glitters is not gold. Not that it's not a wonderful position and a wonderful opportunity, but it comes at a cost.
Yes, no question about it. When they had asked me to be vice president of sales and marketing, I felt like I really had hit exactly where I truly thought God had placed me. This was really back into what I call my sweet spot, no pun intended, but really in a place that I felt like, okay, I studied for this. This is my love. And so when they asked me to step in 2017, I knew this was a God thing, because this was taking me now back out of my comfort zone. I was fortunate to have the 6 years of running the plant in Oklahoma, so I had both sides of our equation to be successful. But yes, when they say it gets lonely at the top, it truly is, because now all of a sudden those final decisions are yours, and 3,500 employees and their families, and just as important, the consumer that, you know, they have flavors out there. They'll swear we make those flavors specifically for them, period. And if you don't have that flavor, you know, it's almost like something's happened in the relationship between the two. And so, I have a saying that says we want to consistently meet the expectation that drives that passion. So every day that you walk through the doors, you have to take it as humble as you can, but at the same time with an intensity to be the best you can be, even though it's just ice cream. I like to say we're creating memories.
And yeah.
So you're right.
Yeah. So it's not like you're making life and death product or product that's going to, you know, it's not some life-saving medicine.
Right.
But it is something that people, they will get upset if they don't. If I can't get that.
No, you're right. And it's a unique product that, whether you've had an unbelievable day and you want to celebrate, or it's a birthday, anniversary, whatever it might be, or it could be that you had a really bad day and you know that friend's waiting for you in the freezer, and at least they will come through for you. So I would say that, and that was one thing that we found, no matter what was happening, people still need something to comfort them. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely a comfort food. So I'm glad I didn't work for a green bean company. Nothing against green beans, but ice cream is just so much more fun.
Well, I think there are a lot of people that have a freezer in their garage or somewhere in their house that's just got all sorts of flavors. My secretary is like that in her family. They always keep like 5 half-gallons of Bluebell, and because everybody has his own favorite flavor. And so it's like, what do you like? Now, me growing up as a kid, it was vanilla Mellorine. I mean, there's not a lot of flavors there.
I'm glad that didn't keep you from the ice cream aisle later on in life, because that would be it's got a little sweetness, I guess.
But, okay, so how does Bluebell go about making new flavors? What's the process for that?
It's a tough job. I say that tongue in cheek. We will take recommendations from anyone and everyone, and when I say that, we ask the employees every year to submit their ideas of what a good flavor would be or a fun flavor to make. And so we'll take as many as 250, 300 suggestions on an annual basis, go through them all, and try to land on about 15.
Okay.
Once we get to that number, and what we're looking for is not just a fun flavor, but one that we can make, mass produce, one that we can find ingredients for of the magnitude that we would need. And then we will go through a series of voting from all the different branches throughout the country, all the way up to the corporate office, and then the final decisions will be made. And we'll usually land between 5 and 7 new flavors every year.
Okay, at the plant, how many different flavors are you making at one time?
At the plant, and really all three plants, because it would take all three to do what we do, we're in about the neighborhood of, I would say, 30 flavors at any one time in the grocery store that you'll see. It can move up and down depending upon seasonality. In the summer, we'll have more fruit flavors. In the winter or during the Christmas holidays, we'll have our holiday favorites, the peppermints and the peppermint barks.
But yeah, then you're like, let's say you're making cookies and cream. So the plant, let's say we'll just take the Brenham plant. Okay, today we're making cookies and cream. All the lines are making the same flavor, or are you making different flavors all the time?
We're making different flavors all the time. We'll have anywhere from 20 to 25 operations in Brenham, and one line of making half gallons, say one half gallon line, makes around 25,000 half gallons in a day.
Okay. All right. And then from the idea, let's say birthday cake, that was something that's probably, relatively new in the last 15 years?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so from the idea that somebody says, or wedding cake, I think it's wedding cake. Okay, we have this idea, okay, let's make this. From the inception to the actual product being made, how long does that take?
We're right now, let's see, we've just entered the new year. We're already looking at our flavors for next year. And so by this time, 1st of May, 1st of June, we'll know what we want in the lineup in 2026. And so then it depends upon, can we get ingredients? Where will the ingredients come from? And if it's a seasonal, and then we'll slot it into one of the months that we bring in a new flavor. So usually about 12 to 18 months.
Okay.
On the other hand, a Dr. Pepper float flavor, we probably worked on that for years to get it where we really felt like we're hitting what the consumer again would expect from a product like that. And
yeah.
So that I remember working on that for probably close to 10 years, in and out. And when I say I, not me,
right,
but
right.
The research and development.
And producing the quality that is in the parameters, that has to be a constant challenge, I would imagine.
Definitely.
So one batch tastes the same as another batch.
That's correct.
Okay. What flavors were, let's say, a swing and a miss?
You know, there's only, in the 43 years I was there, the only one that just really runs to my mind, and it actually tasted really good, but I think the name, this is one of these marketing, you can go back and forth, but it was a peanut butter and jelly.
Oh, really?
It was a peanut butter ice cream or a kind of a peanut, I don't even remember the exact base of the vanilla or with peanut butter, but it had a jam or a sort of strawberry variegate that was rippled through. And, we had people calling, did you cut the crust off before you put it in? You know, that kind of thing. It just didn't make it. It stayed for quite a while. But luckily, that's the only one that really pops in my mind. Now, there are other flavors that obviously do tremendous, but.
Okay, somebody told me this, Ricky, that, we would be shocked to know that really vanilla tends to dominate as far as a favorite flavor. Is that true?
That's true. Nationwide,
more so
companies.
More so than chocolate?
Definitely. Hand over foot. I mean, it's in its own category because you do so much with vanilla, whether it be on top of a pie or a cake, or some like to put the chocolate syrup on top.
Right.
Or
and that's just straight vanilla. That's not natural vanilla bean or what?
For us, it's homemade vanilla. Now, natural vanilla bean is very good, and people actually, you can get into the debate which one do you like when you're eating strictly vanilla between natural vanilla bean and homemade vanilla, but homemade vanilla still, I put that in the Hall of Fame. That's that flavor is the one that put us on the map.
So when you went from, you were plant manager or whatever they called you, but basically over the plant for, you said 7 years?
6 years.
Six years. And then from then went to vice president of sales
I went
and marketing.
To from there in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, I went to Brenham as the general sales manager. And then I, from 2003 to 2010, and then I became vice president of sales and marketing in 2010.
And that was fun.
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah. Okay, so is being president and CEO as fun as being vice president of marketing or?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. I think that they both, I think that the VP of sales and marketing came natural. But I think that I love the intensity of being the president from, again, the standpoint that the challenges that are there, it really became more of a people job as much as it was a strategic job.
Yes.
And so I loved, you know, not just strategizing on how to, you know, sell and promote a flavor or a product, but really all aspects, machinery, you know, being as efficient as we possibly could in what we were making. And so there, it was like opening up a door to a whole new room you didn't, you know you even had, and just absolutely loved that as well. But again, as you mentioned, the pressure that came with the position was, you know, you're in a boardroom once a month having nice conversations with the yes, with board members. I was trying to think of a pun, but I couldn't. And which was great. You know, those are the kind of things that challenge you. But I go back to my faith, and I go back to, I knew that this is where God had placed me.
Yeah.
And so I knew it wasn't me. I knew that, God, you have me here for a reason and a season. And so I cannot think of a day that I didn't start on my knees to say, God, please let me be attentive to what you have for me today.
Yeah.
And then when those tough decisions come, to be as prayed up as I possibly could.
Yeah. So when did you come to know Christ, Ricky?
Back when I was 10.
Okay.
1969, May 18th.
Amen.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would think, and just kind of reading between the lines and some of the things in the book, that dealing with the who am I, O Lord? You know, as David said to the Lord, who am I, O Lord, and what is my father's house that you have brought me this far? You can kind of have to pinch yourself and say, you know, they have this thing called the imposter syndrome, where it's like, I don't want to be found out that I'm, you know, I'm not this guy that has all the answers to all the questions. I'm just a regular guy. But God uses people like that.
Absolutely.
That are humble. It's the prideful guys that think, you know, I'm God's gift to the ice cream industry, that tend not to go very far.
That's no, you're exactly right. And you mentioned that earlier, when you have a boss that he can't empathize. All I can do is stand there and critique. They've missed the boat altogether. And I think that to be able to get into their shoes and to listen is so critical in the role of a CEO, because
yeah.
Things are happening. And who knows better than whether it be in the sales area, it may be a market that's brand new, or maybe on the production line. Having all the answers or acting like you have all the answers can get you in trouble very fast. And so humble is, I try to live there, because it's by God. It's
yeah.
Not Ricky Dixon, I can tell you.
Yeah. Life as a CEO is how many hours a week?
On average, I would say if things are smooth, around, I'd say 50. Now, my wife's sitting over here, she may say more. So,
yeah.
You know,
a lot of travel?
Only self-inflicted. And again, when I say that,
it's whatever you kind of want.
Yeah, I made sure that because I spent so many years in the sales side of things, I'd been to all the different branches throughout the country. I remember getting that undercover boss had called and said, I've been out. I don't think this is going to work because I enjoyed the people part of it. But
yeah.
Then in the plant, I really kind of immersed myself more into the plant on the people side. But travel was still there. You just had to plan accordingly.
Yeah. And I'm assuming Bluebell has its own plane.
Yeah, we go on Expedia, and no, we do not have our own plane.
Really?
No. I've spent many, many time on everything from, I won't name companies, but you can imagine, no, it was whatever the best deal was, and usually it was eating peanuts towards the back in those high number selected
Yikes.
Seats.
I mean, you're in Brenham, so you're flying out of where?
Either Austin or Houston, whether it be Bush or Intercontinental, Hobby.
Okay, to get to Bush Airport from Brenham would take you an hour?
Hour and 15 minutes.
Okay.
Depending upon traffic.
Yeah. Boy, I would think, living in Texarkana, Texas, which is, you know, our airport flies to Dallas and that's it. And then you have to drive to Shreveport or Dallas or Little Rock. Travel is a bear.
Yes.
And so if you were going to be, I was a friend of mine that owns his own company there in Texarkana. He said, hey, if I didn't have a plane, I would spend so much time in airports.
Yeah.
And so I'm surprised.
Yeah, well, a very conservative company, making sure that we focus on ice cream. And they figure you get up earlier and get to the airport. Austin was actually a little easier to get out of than Houston. But
yes,
either way.
I could see that. Well, the book is called One Scoop at a Time, Stories and Lessons from Fear to Faith. And we're going to get into the fear with Ricky Dixon, the author and the former CEO and president of Bluebell Creameries, when we come back from the break. You're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here, the pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas, and the founder of From His Heart Ministries. From His Heart is heard every weeknight at 6 p.m. Central Time right here on American Family Radio. And you might have heard the vacuum cleaners in the background. We are live from the floor of the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, and it's noisy.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email pastorjeff@fromhisheart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking to Ricky Dixon, former CEO and president of Bluebell Creameries, and his book is called One Scoop at a Time, Stories and Lessons from Fear to Faith. Okay, Ricky, let's get into the fear part, from fear to faith. Many of our listeners know that it was a big listeria outbreak in 2015 that affected Bluebell Creameries. I'd never even heard of listeria before. You know, there are other diseases with foods that you hear about, salmonella or whatever. This was the first time something like this had ever hit Bluebell.
Yes, definitely. In fact, even in the ice cream industry, you know, ice cream is a low risk when we're talking about this, mainly for the fact that it's a pasteurized product produced and then put into a minus 20 environment. So to have something like this was new, not just to us as a company, but to the industry.
So what is listeria?
Well, it's everywhere. It's in dirt. It's outside. It's inside. And for the most part, if it's a low, if we take it in, it's a very low. If it's a low number, it won't really affect you in many ways. It really gets into the immune deficient and the pregnant woman where it really kicks in. Or if it's grown exponentially, if it's left out, it starts growing about 40 degrees and then starts doubling every 30 minutes. So it's a pathogen that you just don't want in a product.
So how did you guys know that you had that? What was the?
Well, we found out through some testing that was done in South Carolina on a monthly basis, a regular basis. We have the products of different states do their own testing.
Okay.
And so they notified us.
Okay. And they're not. Are they testing just for a broad range of something growing and found that one?
Yeah, the ones you just described, with salmonella, if you got baked goods, there's that good chance, that could be there. But there's a handful of things that they test for just to make sure that the product's safe.
Did this was something you found and then pulled it. Did anybody report, hey, I got sick from that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was a tough battle. The thing with listeria, I think it was 2010, that they came up with a way to actually identify fingerprint in every different strand of listeria. So when you find it, you have a fingerprint to it, and that goes into a database. So if anybody has been sick with listeria, they can match that. And so some in Kansas were matched with that. And so, over the course of the next few months, you do a lot of testing. We called in experts from the outside, from microbiologists to the FDA to the state, and went through. And finally, in April 21st, we made the decision that we didn't want to go any further to make any more issues to keep coming up. And so we stopped production in all three plants.
Wow.
We pulled about 8 million gallons of ice cream out of really the world, because we were selling some products down in Mexico and Puerto Rico.
Wow.
And decided to do it right. And when I say that, your first thought is just test the product when it's made and then you'll know.
Right.
But if you really want to get and do it right, we took all the machines out of the production floor. We took the floor up. We took the walls down. We studied everything and anything that could be a cause. And again, through the help of microbiologists.
Did you ever figure out what was?
No, there's a lot of different things you can look at. But the main thing is, now today, we have the most incredible environmental program testing places that, again, the experts experts say this is the area you need to be looking at. And once your environment is clean, and this is, you know, a theory that once the environment's clean, then you're good to go. Well, we're taking it a step further. We're going to test every single product every single day in the morning and in the afternoon to make sure throughout the day, I should say, to make sure it doesn't get in. And then through the final product testing and the environmental, you've pretty much done all that you can do.
Okay, so has this particular bacteria, is a bacteria?
Yeah.
Okay, has that ever impacted any other ice cream company?
Yeah, there have been others that have.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so that is something that ice cream manufacturers need to be concerned of. Okay, so as a business, when you have that, now that it's attached to your name, right. There can be, you talk about fear. Can we overcome this? Can we come back from this?
That's right.
Now, you weren't CEO at the time that
that's
hit.
Correct.
How much did you learn from the CEO that was running the
company? Well, there's no question. We spent many, many hours together and absorbing all the information that we could. He was committed to doing the right thing and taking the right steps. And so in the course of those months, as we built for the best way of explaining each plant and what we felt like needed to be done was by his lead. And then as he handed that baton off to keep that momentum going and to assure not just, again, the employees, but the consumer, look, we're going to stay committed to this plan because all it takes is one day that you're not paying attention. And, you know, yesterday was great, but today's a brand new opportunity. So,
okay, so you shut down the plant for 6 months.
It's April 21st, really in our Brenham plant, we were shut down almost to November. We brought our Alabama plant up first, and then Broken Arrow, Oklahoma came in second. The size of our plant in Brenham is just so much larger, so it didn't come actually back online until November.
Okay, so all those employees are then laid off?
We had three-tier. We had some that we did have to lay off, some that we furloughed and paid them a portion of their salary, and then we had those employees that we needed to get the plants in the condition that needed to be. But
okay, so if you're not a company that's a heavyweight like Bluebell and you have something like that happen, you're probably going to go out of business.
It gets real, real dark. There's no question. Every day is critical. And, I devote a chapter in the book on the crisis is what we call it.
Yeah.
It's a situation that, you know, it comes out of nowhere, you get hit with. But I will say, staying on your knees, praying hard, and just praying for the peace in the middle of the storm. And that's really where the essence of the book came from, is how do you have peace in the middle of the storm when things seem to be falling apart? I use Mark 4 as my go-to chapter where Jesus and the disciples get on the boat.
Oh, one of my favorite stories.
He goes to sleep in the front of the boat. I've never understood that. I thought, how do you go to sleep when you've got this storm? And yet when they wake him up, meaning that he didn't wake up on his own, he does one of those mic drops, peace be still, and everything goes calm. And I love that from the standpoint that during just not only that crisis, but crisis in my life, that I really literally visually put myself next to Jesus and try to sleep and find that peace that passes all understanding.
Yeah.
And when you can get to that point, knowing, look, it's out of my control. I'm going to do everything you are leading me to do, everything that I believe in my heart's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. The peace does come. It does come. It doesn't mean that the fear is not right outside knocking on the door.
Right.
But Christ is right there.
Well, it doesn't sound like with that particular issue that you guys were necessarily negligent or you weren't minding the store. That just kind of happened because you couldn't even pinpoint where how it happened.
Yeah, and we could spend a lot of time diving into it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that we could discuss, but at the same time, I think the key to it is making sure, ice cream's supposed to be fun.
Right.
And you shouldn't be thinking about what we're talking about even. So that's why we felt like we had to start at the door, then you walk in the front door all the way to when that product goes out the back, that it's the safest environment that it possibly can. And so for when I go down on the production floor, I used to go down and take friends and whatnot. Can't do that anymore.
Oh, really?
I mean, we're literally going in. I don't know, it's going to sound crazy, but washing up, and gloving up, suiting up.
Right.
It's time for operation. And so it's as clean as we could possibly make it.
All right, let me ask you this, Ricky. So you've been away for now a few years, and what would Ricky say today to Ricky that started in 1981. What words of wisdom would you have for a young guy?
Yes, I think, in fact, I think it's tomorrow's my 1 year anniversary of being away. So it's like,
right?
Wow, it just seems like yesterday that we walked away. But I think the key thing that I've learned is the word, and it's their patience. That, you know, we were moving at a fast pace, so things were happening fast. And then there was a moment in time that as I was moving up the ladder, I would say I got somewhat content, not intentionally to do that, but promises as we went into Oklahoma that, look, that we were going to have a new region here. And then all of a sudden that went away. And when the phone call finally came that, look, I'm thinking this is a promotion, it was just the opposite. And I remember having that moment with God saying, I thought you brought me here for all this new region and all the different things that I thought we had planned. And he mm-hmm. said, I didn't bring you here for a promotion. I brought you here for my purpose. Mm-hmm. Let's get back to doing what you're here supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And that was a game changer for me. So I would say the word patience and not losing sight of that one moment in time to make sure that I'm doing what he's asked me to do.
Yeah. Wow. So you're a high school or a college senior and no idea that choosing to go to Bluebell was going to be a life-changing decision. Ricky, what do you say to the guys that are really in the, you know, kind of on the front lines, family, marriage, pursuing your career, trying to climb the corporate ladder, those kinds of things? Because family can take a back seat if you're not careful.
That's right.
And you can focus all your attention on work, have little left for home. How did you navigate those waters?
Well, I think it's a critical part of what we would define as success, whether it be the way the world defines success or the way maybe a Christian defines it. And they can be the same, but at the same time, I really home in on the word seasonality. There are going to be times where, you know, I needed to be there, whether it be early in the morning or late in the evening. At the same time, there are quieter seasons. Mm-hmm. And so it's during those seasons you make sure that those that you're working with and around, you know, can make a t-ball game or make a church or a school play.
Sure.
Because you want to make sure they're invested into their family. If you lose sight of that, if they're not happy at home, they're bringing that to work. Mm-hmm. And so you again, I like to use the word empathize. I want to make sure that we're paying good attention to both of those. But the family is just as critical, if not more. It's just you also have a job to do when you come in, so you have to do it with intensity.
Yeah. Okay, so no doubt you've had to do a lot of hiring and firing over your career. What would be your words of wisdom in terms of how a manager, a president, a boss does those two things? Because the hiring is a lot more fun than the firing.
That's right. I think being transparent, being honest as quick as you can. If you see a situation that's developing, it's better to hit it head on than to let it permeate over time. The hard part is when you get hired in, your family. So now you want to do all you can to work with your family member, per se, using right. that analogy. But what I've seen and found, the best firing can be a word of encouragement. I've had some great managers that have come that have the employee has walked by my office and said, well, I just got let go, but I felt like I was getting promoted, which, you know, that's an art per
yes.
se. But you want to hit it head on early. And I tell the employees, too, whether it be a management or on the floor, you know, if you're not happy, if this isn't for you, that's
right.
okay. It's
right.
okay. Go find that, because you're going to spend a lot of your time doing whatever that is.
Right.
And I think God uses building blocks along the way. There's some, you know, I was there 43 years, never felt the call to leave. Others have been there in a season. I go back mm-hmm. to that word that prepared them for whatever the next step was. And so I wish them the best, and I still call them family members. But I want them to enjoy and find that sense of purpose.
Is Bluebell committed to promoting from within, or do they sometimes bring a heavy hitter from the outside?
For the most part, we do both. I mean, I started coming in from college, uh-huh. and so from that level. But for the most part, most of our management team has been hired. Has been promoted, either
yeah.
promoted up. We try to keep a balance, because you
yeah.
need really both sides of that, depending upon the expertise of whatever the position is.
Sure. Well, this has been fascinating. So where can our listeners get a copy of this, Ricky?
One Scoop at a Time can be found on Amazon. It can also be found and more about the book on onescoopatatime.com. But those are probably the two best go-tos.
And what would you like listeners or readers to carry away from the book?
Well, I sure do hope that in the process of learning about flavors and ice cream and Bluebell and Ricky making his way to, from high school to college, I really hope the heart of the book comes out, and that is how you can find peace in the middle of the storm and how you can navigate life here on earth, but more importantly, preparing yourself for eternity, and that's through belief in Jesus Christ.
Amen. That is good. Okay, last question. Favorite flavor for you?
I'm going to push homemade vanilla to the side because it's my what I call my Hall of Fame flavor. Today, it's salted caramel brownie, which is now no longer available, so I need to they rotate that one in and out. So I think my wife and I are hitting tin roof pretty hard as well. You can't go wrong. You just find one and get to eating.
Okay, so we were saying when I was calling on Bluebell, they took me into a room where the ice cream was, what, like 22 degrees?
Yes,
before it goes into
On production, if you were to grab a half gallon or a pint off the line, it's around 22 degrees when it hits the carton.
Yeah, and what do they call that?
Well, they call it heaven. It's never been frozen. So milk, cream, sugar, all those great things to go together the way God intended dessert to be.
Yeah, very good. Well, Ricky, this has been a joy, so I appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you.
And I encourage you to pick up a copy, One Scoop at a Time, Stories and Lessons from Fear to Faith. It's much more than just about ice cream. It's about life and how to keep your eyes on Jesus no matter what's going on in life. He is the anchor, and the scripture says, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith. Well, thanks for listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Go out today, shine for Christ, share what great things the Lord has done for you, and God will use you as his witness. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.